Am I talking into my microphone? It's so dark in here.
Yes, it's been a bit of an outage.
Is that you, Scotty?
Yeah, I think so. I can't see you, but I can hear you.
Yeah, it's...
The whole show is going to go like this. No, it's not, I promise. There's a mood light in here that seems to be doing the job.
Yeah, so. We're fine. Welcome to Open Source's Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. For the next hour, we're going to talk about the Amber Alert and how it affected our lives. And no, we're not. We're not. We'll let others do that.
We talked about it for 5 minutes, and it's fine.
Yeah.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes even interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, it's just going to be the news. We're going to talk about Mueller's testimony. The special counsel finally made his appearance before two congressional committees. But was it everything that Donald Trump's critics hoped it would be? And then, Boris Johnson is the new Prime Minister of the UK. And he started out by basically firing all the moderates from cabinet and installing hardcore Brexiteers. Brexit should be super easy now, right? And finally, the rent is too damn high. That's from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, but is anyone wanting to form the next government of Canada in a position to do anything about it? That will be at the end of the show to begin the show. Scotty's messing with the lamp.
Trying to create more light in here. That's what I do in my day job normally, but...
Okay.
And I won't give it up, I promise.
All right, so we're going to tackle the federal scene again. As you know, there's an election coming up in less than 100 days. And there's a lot of different news this week.
Busy federal scene this week.
Yes. Jody Wilson-Raybould has a book coming out on September 20th. It's not going to be about SNC-Lavalin, they say, but it's still going to be, if I can find the quote here, it's going to be recommended reading. Yes.
All the goss that's fit to print.
Yeah. Well,
or is it a bio?
The publisher says it's timely and impassioned. And a must-read for all Canadians, so I mean...
So it's in the can, then. It's written.
Must be.
Well, let's see if we can get her on and talk about our book.
We may. Maybe we can.
Yeah, you never know.
That's interesting that we get this announcement this week when Gerald Butts is back in the news and back on the campaign trail. Butts is back in town.
We get to say Butts several times a show now, too.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think that's surprising news.
What are he's going to play a key role, whatever that is. Just hanging out, getting the coffees.
I don't think
he's going to be like the William Kinsella of, or Warren Kinsella of the
Well, this is it.
The libs, right?
You know, everybody has their players now. Like, mm-hmm. Now that Kinsella is like on the green team, they can't make the claim about, like, no matter how Elizabeth May tries to mitigate the role, it's like we all have our dark operators, are masters of the dark arts now, and like Gerald Butts is that. The Conservatives, like,
it's an experienced guy. Like I saw who you want.
Yeah, I saw a clip of Lisa Raitt today going on about, oh, can you believe that Gerald Butts is back? Canadians are going to see right through this. It's like, come on, you still got Corey Tenike on the team?
Yeah.
Like, really? You're going to get on your high horse with people like Dean French still on the, he's like, when are we going to hear about Dean French being part of somebody's team? I guarantee you it's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
You're not going to throw that a player like him out of the race, too. And I don't know what the NDP's got going on, but like Jagmeet Singh had to delete a tweet where he blamed a CBC reporter for not including a detail about one of his town halls when she had included the detail. He just hadn't read the article to the very end.
Well.
But hey, he made it into the news cycle for something.
For a minute.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's what you need. Got to get the face out there, especially this time of year.
I'm not sure he... I think it's just symptomatic of how the NDP seems to almost be a non-entity in the election. So
yeah,
far.
Depending on what news thing you read, but yeah. Or where your social media is queued up to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Butts' role is unclear, but he's back. Did he ever really go away?
Oh, I don't.
Shear is going to try and treat it as a red meat issue or a white milk issue or whatever. somewhere in the food guide, there's something about butts. We don't know. I guess we'll let that go. We have like 20 topics to work through in 10 minutes. It's just really fast.
You did introduce the food guide, food guide gate.
It's going to be the food guide election.
Which, I mean, like the naked politics of it. Like, first of all, Andrew Scheer says to like dairy farmers and the dairy industry, like, not enough dairy in the food guide, that's why I'm going to scrap it, which is clear pandering. And also something like that Maxime Bernier has like really like, oh, you're in so tight with the dairy compact, like you're in their pocket. And it's like, this kind of proves it, that we're getting into the food guide and we're saying like, not enough dairy here, not
scrap
enough dairy.
Scrap the food guide and supply management while you're at it.
It's like, my son drank chocolate milk. No chocolate milk in the food guide. Whatever. And then the liberals
come out.
Yeah, it's
called milk. With a chocolate bar in it. Yeah.
Well.
Give or take. Have you seen the amount of sugar that's on chocolate milk?
Yes. Being someone who occasionally enjoys the chocolate
milk. Oh, me too.
But then liberals come out and go, look how anti-science Scheer is. He's going to throw out the food guide. And it's like, and it's funny watching Scheer like, oh, look at them like beating a dead horse. It's like, dude, you're all guilty of this like pathetic politicking.
You're fighting over that. This is what you're fighting over.
You know, yes, the food guide was put together by like nutritionists and people who have like science degrees. But
it's probably the best it's ever been. I don't know.
I hate to break it to you. Yeah. Nobody, liberal or conservative, follows the food guide. 3 square meals a day. Like,
it's probably virtually impossible when you're an MP or an MPP or
I think it's virtually impossible for most people in like everyday life. Like, I mean, that's why these box meals are such big business, right? Mm-hmm. Like these like HelloFresh and things. It's like, we're going to send you all the ingredients you need, so you basically have to assemble your dinner. And I'm sure at some point someone's going to come like, this whole like taking 20 minutes to prepare your meal, that's too long. We're just going to send you the meal.
We're going to eat it for you as well, because that's all.
Right.
It took too long.
Yeah. It's one of these silly slap fights that I think the pre-election period is full of at times. Like, just these, like, we know we're going to fight, so we have to fight about something, and we're not going to release our platforms too early. So look what this guy said. Let's fight about this week. And I think that's where we are.
Yeah. So should we talk about other fights?
Yeah.
There was the online, mostly on Twitter, about Attawapiskat. MPs Romeo Saganash, Charlie Angus taking shots at Seamus O'Regan, who hadn't been to Attawapiskat yet, but had headed up there. If you're not sure if that name's ringing a bell, they're one of the, is it 30 reserves that have either a boil water or a do not drink advisory. Mm-hmm. Some of those have been going on for years. Some of them have been going on for decades. Mm-hmm. So they've come up with some kind of plan for Attawapiskat that there's going to be a certain amount of bottled water. They're promising medical teams are going to go up there. I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures, but the children in particular have rashes and scabs due to the water. They're going to flush the water system. There's going to be training. There's all of this stuff. And you would hope that this isn't happening just because it's an election year. But considering the amount of time that this has been going on, there's a little bit of that in there as well, I believe, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we're going to see a resolve on that, because they're going to have to go up to Attawapiskat and then deal with all of the other reserves in Canada, let alone in Ontario, that are having water quality issues as well. Mm-hmm. And is that going to happen before the election or any promises? We don't know.
No, and there was the whole controversy, too, about them trying to reach a deal with the people at Attawapiskat about setting up a clinic that has yet to materialize, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's... A lot of people came out in 2015 and voted for the Liberals on this idea that they were going to, you know, go whole hog, let's say, into truth and reconciliation. And
yep. They've done a terrible job.
The 4 years.
Absolutely
terrible job. The 4 years either proves, like, just how hard the job is or proves, like, just how...
how committed they
limp
are.
The Liberals were at, like, having a wholesale reaction to Indigenous issues. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of both. It's I mean, you can't really, given the atmosphere, like, dedicate, even though they should, as much resources as humanly possible to these situations on the reservation, because you're automatically going to get attacked by people who are racist against indigenous people. I mean, and that's been on the rise, too. I one of the things I regret last week about Bernie not being in town is not getting a chance to ask him about the People's Party's indigenous policy, because I don't think they have one.
No, and if they do, it's probably not very good. So since you've touched on it, should we talk about Bernie? I saw the back of your head online there.
Yeah.
among others. So, and the,
from an undisclosed location.
The big secret redacted undisclosed location wasn't that big a secret. Somebody figured it out quite quickly and then posted to an unrelated article on the Mercury Tribune. So by then, everybody knew where it was. The venue, look, you know, there's only so many venues like that to go around. We're still not going to mention it just because.
Well,
if Adam wasn't there, or did you? Is it out? I mean, it's out. It's
well,
it's a non.
I will not disclose it because I gave my word.
And I wasn't there, but I could. But I'm not going to because I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of saying you disclosed it. I wasn't even there.
What I will say is like what you said. There's only so many venues that can hold like that number of people in Guelph. And also, I'd point out that somebody who was there, not a member of the press, but somebody who was like in attendance to either hear from Bernier as an interested citizen or as a person interested in the people. Party, posted on Twitter and actually tagged the location. So
it didn't take long for it to come out.
Like the barest minimum of detective work, like revealed it. And what I'll say about the venue is like no one who was going to protest it, Bernie's visit
was would, there.
Well, they weren't there, but they would never use this venue.
What? Because there's only one entrance. Is that why? Or?
No, because it's not that they're seen, right?
Well, yeah, but
like for the purposes of boycotting it, quote, like we want to know where it is so we can boycott it. It's something that the people who would boycott it would never use in the first place,
right? But there was a bit of a scene in front of City Hall. It sounded like it was quite peaceful.
It sounded nice.
The counter protest or whatever you want to call it. So it's not as if there was, you know, the rivers of blood. By the sounds of what was being chatted up, so beyond all that too, like what was the mood there? Was it, you know, tell us a little bit about what you heard, or can you?
No, I can say anything I want about it, except for where it was.
It sounded like I initially heard that they'd sold 100 tickets, but from what I saw, there was only about 50 to 60 people there.
There was probably 70 people there max, and that's like all in. That includes like. The people who probably organized it on the Guelph end, the people who travel with Bernier.
So the gang was there, not just
so yeah, it's
not just the interested parties. There was like the team, so that would be some of the numbers as well,
right?
But it went off without a hitch. Like they got to do their thing, and will they do it again?
Fine. It was like more or less what I expected.
Is the candidate expecting things at all candidates debates, or has that not come up yet?
I don't think that's come up yet.
Well, I guess it remains to be seen. But then again,
I can't imagine. I mean, the chamber standard has been, and the chamber one is always the tricky
just have
one.
The top four, right?
Right. It's the four main parties.
Because that's where John Trammell went and lost his mind at the.
There have been occasions. I mean, Julian Eacham crashed the voters the. Electoral system Q&A thing that Fair Vote Guelph had in 2015. The chamber one typically is the one that's limited the number of candidates. Most of the other debates are an all candidates forum. So, I mean, that'll be the one to watch. The most interesting part about the Bernier thing, though, was when like a dyed-in-the-wool conspiracy theorist got up and asked Bernier how he was going to accomplish anything. Like, wasn't he worried that the powers that be were going to give him a, quote, Kennedy haircut?
Oh, Soros and the gang? Is that who's...
Well, he didn't say who
the
powers
S-word?
That be, a.k.a. the mind masters, were.
That's interesting. Did they let you record? Did anybody record it?
I recorded the whole thing.
Oh, there you go. Is it on the political?
I haven't... No, I'm
You've got stuff. Yeah.
I'm saving it.
Oh, excellent.
I'm very saving good. It. But you can watch the whole thing. It's like Perolivus, the Mark Perolivus, the
yes, yeah.
candidate, streamed it all on his YouTube channel.
So I guess before we change topics, the late breaking news is that the election date may move yet.
It's yeah.
under review as to whether it will or not. The chief electoral officer is going to review the election date because it conflicts with Shemini Atzeret, an Orthodox Jewish holiday. And it sounds like this isn't the first time it's happened. And they've moved the date before for a provincial election. Will they do it for the federal election? It remains to be seen.
I'm surprised it went back to a federal judge. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be, but I mean...
75,000 people.
At the same time, this... We have fixed election dates.
Yeah. You guys knew.
Nobody like looked ahead and said like, what's going to happen on October 21st, 2019?
Because that one wouldn't be on the calendar. Like, unless they have the universal faith calendar that every holiday pops up.
Because if there was an election on like April 15th, 2022, and that turned out to be Easter weekend.
Yeah.
That would come out like.
Right away.
Right away. Yeah.
Anyway. I don't know. You think they could engineer some kind of pardon or like a pass for one day, but I don't know. Anyway,
yeah,
we'll see. It may be October 21st. It may not. So,
all right.
Breaking. We don't have our sound effects. I just did that with my mouth.
Let's go to Washington, where Robert S. Mueller III, the special counsel, former FBI director, testified begrudgingly in front of two House committees yesterday.
Yeah.
Pretty much occupied the news all day.
Looked like he needed a coffee, I will say that. Did you watch anything?
I mean, he's late 70s,
yeah.
isn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Doesn't have the stamina. Yeah. Well, but, of course, that's the kind of thing we'd hear from Trump. So.
Of course. Well, maybe if Robert Mueller had a button on his desk where he could ask for a Diet Coke. Anyway... the nitty gritty stuff. I think if people were looking for like the Code Red moment in like A Few Good Men, where like
punch?
Tom Cruise like
you can't
yells
handle
at
the truth.
Jack Nicholson, like, did you order the Code Red? And Jack Nicholson goes, yes, I did. Like that didn't happen. But I mean, I think this tweet from a comedy writer named Matt Oswald said it best, that watching the Mueller hearings was like a Wheel of Fortune puzzle that is completely solved, but the contestants keep guessing letters anyway. Which is, I think,
is
where
there
we
a Z?
Are.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in the intelligence briefing, or the intelligence committee hearing, Adam Schiff, who's the chairman, asked Mueller, did Trump and his campaign welcome and encourage Russian interference? Which Mueller said yes. There was a lot of yes, no's, and
can't talk about that. I saw the one where he kept can't talk about that.
And then Mueller said, did the Trump campaign lie about covering it up? And Mueller said yes. And like theoretically, that should be enough. That's indictable right there. Or not indictable, but impeachable.
Yeah, it's not even the missing letter. But the problem is, part of it too is the can he... You know, can a sitting president go down for stuff like this? And the answer is no.
Because of the Office of Legal Counsel's report.
Right.
But I mean, that was in that was in the morning one, which I was actually able to watch, where Mueller basically said that the OLC ruling that you can indict a sitting president was, you know, that was basically the thing that stopped him from saying that he should be charged. He also went on to say that Donald Trump, when he leaves office, can be charged.
So he has to stay in for another 4 years.
Assuming he gets voted out next year at 12 noon or 12:20, whenever the new person takes the oath of office.
On clink.
On
12
noon.
The Law and Order sound makes a noise and then Trump goes.
At 12 noon on January the 20th, 2021, new president gets sworn in, FBI comes in behind Trump, puts the cuffs on him and leads him away. I mean, maybe not, but that's...
Trump will just go somewhere with
But theoretically, that's how it could go down.
Yeah. Trump will go to Moscow. Oh, no. Maybe not.
they don't want him in Moscow.
So, yeah, there was really no knockout punch. It's not as if he deviated from the script. Supposedly he said no like 206 times or declined to answer.
It.
Like, not going to answer that.
Yeah. I referred back to my report.
I briefly saw part of it. And then when I went back on, he was like walking out. So I had to wait for the synthesis from the news. Russian meddling alive and well, according to him, by the sounds of it. It's not as if that has gone away. And it was like, expect something like that. It's like, he was giving everybody a heads up, really.
Yeah.
One comment I saw is that the Democrats were really, really hoping there was going to be some kind of knockout punch, and it didn't happen. There was a few rounds in there, but it was not as if they went, boom.
Well,
he's going down. And of course, Trump went ballistic on Twitter like right away. If he wasn't talking about the squad trying to distract from everything, they're not smart, they're young, they're stupid. He went right into the any point made by a Republican. He was just sort of retweeting people. They're like, you see, there's no collusion. Not true.
Well, you know, there was a point where
no obstruction.
I can't remember which hearing it was, but yeah, somebody said to him, so is it like true that this was a witch hunt? And Mueller said, no, it's not a witch hunt. It's like, did you exonerate the president? Right. No, I did not exonerate the president.
Witch hunt is not a legal term, right?
Well, it's
as much
true.
As people would like it to be, right?
But the gist that we're getting at is that...
He's been charged with witch hunting.
Right, like, you know, somebody asked him, is like, so was this a hoax? I think this was Schiff, too. And I was like, was this a hoax? And Mueller's like, no. So the other...
Crooked Hillary in her emails. Yeah, that's
well,
where Trump
that was.
Like, crooked Hillary.
I can't remember who was asking about that at the Justice Committee, where somebody was, like, trying to turn it into, like, a thing, like Christopher Steele should be investigated as a foreign agent for the Steele dossier, and that the real collusion was between Steele and Hillary Clinton, and that Russia was feeding Steele misinformation, even though a lot of stuff in the Steele dossier has been confirmed, that Russians were selling misinformation to Steele, who was then selling it to the Clinton campaign. I mean, that's like black helicopter stuff.
Yeah. The Steele dossier coming
soon. But it was
coming
out of the mouth of elected officials,
Ben
which
Affleck.
Makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah. It does have a bit of a movie tinge to it. There's going to be, I think I've said this before, there's going to be some fantastic movies come out of this.
I don't know about fantastic.
Some adequate Netflix movies are going to come out of this. So Russian interference, yes. Trump had business in Russia. That's still sort of mysterious. The Trump Tower Moscow, which failed, but there's some overlap there. And of course, he's just denying and deflecting and doing everything that he can. But I mean, what came out of this was 35 people and 3 companies charged, and some people have gone to jail out of stuff that has come out of this investigation. So it's not as if there was nothing came out of it, as Trump and fam would like you to believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was no – the lead up to this earlier in the week was like, well, it's going to be damning explosive testimony coming out of it. They're trying to play it up a little bit, but it did turn out to just sort of to fizzle.
Well, it wasn't going to be because Bob Mueller wouldn't perform for the camera. And then he had like this last minute thing where he's like, can I bring Aaron Zebley with me? Well, who is like his primary deputy.
Yeah.
During the special counsel, and the Justice Committee was like, no, we want to talk to Batman. We don't want to talk to Robin.
Arthur?
Aaron.
No. Who's Batman's butler?
Oh, Alfred.
Alfred. Arthur.
Aaron Zebley did take part, though, in the Intelligence Committee briefing. Also, you know, there was some, I can't remember who, but somebody made the point that for the sake of like building the argument, they should have like flipped the committee hearings, where they should have done the Intelligence Committee hearing first and sort of like to lay the groundwork, and then the Justice Committee second to lay out like how it was investigated.
I always wonder why they want to jam these things into one day. Is it like...
It's because he would only do one day.
Oh.
I mean, and this is where...
You got me for a day.
Yeah, this is where Mueller... Arr. You know, God bless him. He's like one of these old fashioned guys who's like, I'm not the story. I'm just a guy doing my job. Let me do my job. I'm just going to hand you my report now and then start packing up my office. Okay, bye. And like,
okay, bye. Okay, see ya.
Yeah, it's like,
let's go for coffee sometime.
And you've seen this in the way it's played out. Like when Bill Barr, the Attorney General, came out and said, oh, yeah, no, Donald Trump totally exonerated. Here's like 4 choice quotes from a 400-page report. And then he had to be like basically shamed for weeks before the report came out. And then several weeks after that, we get this leak of a letter that Mueller sent to Barr and saying like, hey, dude, you totally mischaracterized my report.
Dude.
But in a different in different hands, if someone like a little bit, not more media savvy, maybe more media savvy, I'm thinking, but
yeah,
Mueller, as soon, like Mueller, you may want to just be hands off. Like, you've been a target for this president and wanting to get rid of you for basically no reason, or basically for the reason that maybe he's guilty and doesn't want to pay any consequences for it. But anyone else, I think, Bill Barr comes out on Sunday, I think it was Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. and says, like, here's my 4-page summary, no collusion, peace out. I think anyone, that if it was me, let's say if it was me, my next call on. Would be to every reporter with a Washington, D.C. area code.
The badge.
Saying, yeah. Come and meet me at the Denny's parking lot in half an hour, and you can ask me any freaking question you want that I can answer legally.
It's like a dead drop, but not exactly, right?
But things happened so quick. Like, this was just March that the report came out. And we're in July, and we're finally getting Mueller to have a sit-down to talk about it? The pain of this is... And I've seen this commentary in a lot of places, is that it's moving so slowly, and we all know where this train is going. It's the Wheel of Fortune puzzle. We know what the puzzle is, but we keep insisting that we have to ratchet up the bank account by keep buying letters instead of just solving the damn puzzle and moving on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. The next thing is impeachment. Mueller delivered an impeachment indictment, basically, and that was something Seth Abramson, who's a lawyer and a writer, said that on Twitter, mm-hmm. that Mueller hasn't delivered a pathway to impeachment. He just can't say it.
Well, he came close. The line was, the president has not been exculpated.
Yeah.
Fans of Law and Order know that one. Exculpatory evidence for acts that he allegedly committed. So that's pretty loaded. That's your way of saying, like, no. He's not clear. There's still stuff potentially going on if you want it to. And of course, he has to put the allegedly in there like we do with anything like this, because it's still all alleged. He's nothing proven yet.
Yeah.
But Trump's taking nothing proven as in, no, they didn't find anything. It's like, well, not proven is a different judgment from guilty or not guilty.
Yeah.
He said, collision. No,
no one at the DOJ can exonerate Trump.
Hmm.
Meaning that there's something...
There's something there. There's some meat on that bone.
And it is up to Congress. And
yeah, that's it. It's up to Congress.
I watched Nancy Pelosi's press conference, and Jerry Nadler, who's the chair of the Justice Committee there, he hasn't been like completely public, but like behind the scenes, he's one of the few people in leadership that's pushing for impeachment. But you could see the look on his face, like
what are you talking about?
We're still not going to impeach. Like, he looked like the kid who was told he can't play video games after church. I almost felt sorry for him because he wants to go, and it's kind of like in his court. He's the Justice Committee chair. He wants to go. A lot of and the number of Democrats in the House who want to go keep going, and it's like, yes, it's going to end up in the Senate, where Trump will likely be exonerated no matter what evidence is dug up.
Yeah.
But the process as it stands right now, with no one in the White House answering subpoenas, no one in the White House responding to documents, you can get Hope Hicks, but you can get Hope Hicks for an hour behind closed doors with in-camera testimony.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable.
She would never roll. Yeah. I happened to be in Costco, and they had a stack of Mueller reports.
Really?
For sale. Yeah, but it's, you open it up, and redacted is the word. Like, I can't wait until that stuff comes out, because that's where it's going to get really interesting, which is redactions. It's half black ink. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why they bothered, because it's just, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's unreadable. Like, here it is.
Well, there's the Mueller
report
with the
for you
Commission
at
report.
Costco and beside Tan France's bio, which looked far more interesting, by the way. But yeah, so we'll see if that ever comes out. It's highly unlikely. But
and to think all Vince from End Credits got from Value Village this week was a face hugger washcloth.
Oh, is that? Oh, well, that's not bad. Was it new? I hope so.
He didn't say. He just thought it was cool.
There's certain things you shouldn't get used at Value Village, but the Mueller report might be one thing you could.
Mm-hmm. Let's leave that there.
Yes.
We're going to come back in a sec and look at news from away, UK specifically. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. 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 Radio.
rent is too damn high.
Too damn high.
Rent is too damn high.
The rent is too damn high.
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 The rent is too damn high.
The rent is too damn high.
Truly statement.
As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here. Listen, someone's child's stomach just growled. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? You gotta listen like me, because our children can't afford to live anywhere. Once again, why? You said that the rent is too damn high.
Mr. McMillan, what's your position on gay shoe marriage?
Rent too damn high, part of you. If you want to marry a shoe, I'll marry you.
And that from 2010 was karate expert Jimmy McMillan, who was running for governor of New York at the time. For the rent is too damn high party, which touches what's going to be our last topic, but we have to get the jump on that. And yeah, you check that out. That's on YouTube. I don't know if it probably doesn't exist as a... That might be on...
Well, YouTube was around at the time.
No, I meant like iTunes or something, if you really want to download it, but...
Gotcha.
Might be time for the too damn high party to come back, but we'll talk about that in topic four. But for now...
You know what? Jimmy McMillan. Probably better governor than Andrew Cuomo.
Oh, I'm
entirely likely. Yeah, so speaking of elections, Boris Johnson won. He 0.2% of the British population voted for Boris Johnson to be the new Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Everybody voted for Britain Trump. Everybody wants Britain Trump from the United Kingston. Everybody. That's what they want. Yeah, that was something. But we'll let that go because we've always sort of talked about Trump. But yes, Boris Johnson's dreams come true. Journalist, commentator Boris Johnson is now the Prime Minister. I have trouble saying that, actually, because I'm surprised. But the problem is adjourning in 3 days. So he's Prime Minister. And there's a possibility that one of the heavy rumors is that when they come back in September, there'll be a snap election, and Boris Johnson, somebody's going to say Boris Yeltsin. Probably Trump is going to say Boris Yeltsin. Boris Johnson might not be Prime Minister. He might be the shortest running Prime Minister ever.
I mean, that would be a bizarre move, because the deadline is October 31st, and he's made a lot of big promises about how he can get a Brexit deal, although nobody seems to know how, and the European Union has said, deal's done. This is your deal.
Yeah. But he's still got a whole stack of rebels on the back benches.
Well,
slim majority.
Well, he's also stacked the front bench with rebels.
Yeah.
He's put like the whole Brexit campaign back together to basically run the Conservative Party. And you know, that includes
Rees-Mogg.
Well, I was going to say, he fired, like, his first move as Prime Minister was to fire 18 cabinet members, including Penny Mordaunt, who was the first female defense minister in the history of the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Had the job for 2 months.
Yep.
I'm not really sure what, like, why you need to shake up the defense ministry if your first, like, major thing is Brexit stuff, but...
And considering what's going on in the Gulf, like, you need...
Yeah. And then he fired his his primary rival in the leadership race from his position in the cabinet.
Yeah. Oh, because I thought he was going to resign, but Jeremy Hunt was actually fired.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson beat him 2-1, so it's not as if it's... but yeah, normally there's a bit of cordiality, but no, I guess...
Yeah, normal. I mean...
You're smoked.
You've seen that, but you've seen that a lot in party politics here. It's like the people who lose to you, you keep them close because the presumption is that they're kind of like the people who can most pose a threat to you. So that's why Elliott is the deputy premier. That's why I can't even think of it. Caroline Mulroney is attorney general. You know, you keep these people close so that, you know, when, you know, there's less room for them to stab you in the back later. But, I mean, this is how kind of, like, short-sighted Boris Johnson is, who, you know, seems to not think very strategically, who seems to think in a very limited manner, who's, like, purely reactionary and responsive, thinks that he can just, like, make things happen by saying them. And one of the things he said was... Because one of the things, and we've talked about Brexit a lot, is that one of the things that's hard for anyone to accept in the deal is what to do about the Irish border. And Johnson said, Oh, we'll just figure that out later. We'll just leave Brexit and we'll just figure it out later.
Yeah, he said something about technology and how technology was going to fix, like, what? Was it chips and all the food or like what?
But I mean, that's like pure out of the Trump book where Trump is like, we're just going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We'll like figure it out later. Like, we'll figure out what we'll replace it. We just have to get rid of it today. We have to get out of the Iran deal. What happens with Iran tomorrow? I don't know. We just have to get out of the deal today. So here's Boris Johnson saying, like, we're just got to get out of Brexit. Just got to make it happen.
The backstop is dead. And the, well, I mean, and he has to appease the DUP or he definitely loses his slim majority. As I said, it's
speaking of DUP, he comes out and he says, we're going to deliver, unite, and defeat. And you know what that spells? Dud. So, like, right
off the bat,
we're
going to be a dud.
Right off the bat, he's saying, I'm a dud. This is my message as a dud. Nobody's happy with this pick. Well,
except for the conservatives, except for like 66% of the conservatives.
2% who voted.
Yeah, because I think they're looking for a character rather than somebody who's going to stay the course kind of thing. Because some of the descriptions, and some of these came from people that worked with him, lazy, poor attention to detail. He's not serious. And one of them said he's a very deeply flawed character because he does have all this sort of, you know, not that you're, your personal and public life when you're at that level crossover, but you know, the screaming fight with a girlfriend a couple weeks ago, police were called, and he's a bit of a live wire, right? And that
also he's got court action right now because of lies told during the Brexit campaign.
Yeah, the £350 million. You know, this money will immediately come back to the UK when we leave. And it's actually not remotely accurate.
No.
They had that bus that was driving around London with it on it, and it's just nonsense. And we're 3 years into the Brexit storyline, right? It's odd, like
4 years.
Four?
You're right.
The wheels have been in motion.
It's been over 3 years. It's like summer of 2016.
We're
into year four.
Yeah, been in motion for years. He says do or die on Brexit? And some of the die, too, might be, I mean, this talk once again raised its head of, you know, Scotland's definitely going to have another independence referendum. That's almost a certainty.
Nicole Sturgeon's already like, we have to have a talk about a second referendum.
Yep. It's going to happen. And the Irish question, too. I mean, there are probably, you know, Northern Ireland did vote to stay in the EU. So, again, it's like they, in turn, DUP or no DUP. That may be something else as well. It may more than one commentator was like, Boris Johnson may be the last prime minister of the United Kingdom, and it wouldn't surprise me.
Cool way to make history.
Yeah,
I mean, the warning signs were all there, right? Because there was that interview he did with Andrew Neil, I think on the BBC, where Boris Johnson's going on about Article 24, Section B of the Goods and General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades. That's what it stands for.
Yep.
And under this provision, it basically says that if the UK and the EU both agree in principle to, you know, this idea of free trade, that, you know, they can sort of keep it going and they won't lose the customs, the thing on goods going back and forth across the border. Like, it'll be as if, like, they're still part of the EU, at least in terms of trade. And Boris Johnson's like, crap, we got it right here. And what Andrew Neil pointed out, Andrew Neil, of course, is the same guy who, like, made Ben Shapiro, you know, leave in an interview with a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But Andrew Neil points out, well, what about Section 5C? And what 5C says is that basically, a free trade deal has to be in place, and you basically have to be abiding by that free trade deal in principle before
you split
before 24B basically goes into effect. So 24B is like, you can act like you have free trade, but you have to have an agreement before you can act like it doesn't have to be ratified, but an agreement has to be in place.
Yeah.
There has to be something that outlines the rules of the road before you can take the car out on the road.
And when you say that, I just sort of blustered through. Look at that.
No. Andrew Neil basically said, do you know about 5C? And he's like, well, no, I don't need 5C. I got 5B. I was like, yeah, but 5C is like, you have to have 5C locked in before you can go with 5B. And it just like in that sort of like 5 minute stretch there, it just you see everything that's wrong with Johnson's premiership before it even happens, where it's like, I don't read the fine print. And and that's where like Brexit is kind of made, is in the fine print. And that's what like the backstop is. The backstop is the fine print. I think, you know, it's problematic. Everything about Brexit is problematic. But I mean, this is like the key part of this that could cause bigger problems. But people like Boris Johnson treat it as like a second thought. It's like, oh, it's a little detail that we can like, you know, we'll just staple a napkin once we work it out on top of it. And, you know, we'll all agree it's no problem. It's like, no, this is a big problem.
Oh, yeah.
And you may not notice it in London, given that London is from the other end of
it's
the
own
UK.
World.
But it's its own world,
it's
right?
It's like it's its own country almost, really, in some ways. But
yeah.
Yeah, so it remains to be seen. Obviously, more to come on this. We'll see what happens. But
I mean, people are already out. Like, there was that, the human chain that blocked his motorcade when he went to the Queen the other day.
So.
Or yesterday, I should say. Because it's only been 3 days.
Oh, my God. Already feels like we've gone on forever. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boris.
Cool. Yeah, so we'll talk about more about Boris probably in the near
Something
future.
Something that Boris doesn't have to worry about is the rent, probably.
No, he's...
10 Downing, locked in.
He's...
I wonder if the cat's staying. Anyway, we can talk about that later.
No, the cat's staying.
That's good. The cat has to go.
Is a government employee, basically.
Charlie? Is it Charlie? I can't remember.
I don't think it's Charlie.
I should know this. The Downing Street
cat.
I'm not sure
it's like should be part of common knowledge.
For 10 points, what is
all right, the rent is too damn high. This is a study that comes from the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. It basically says that for most of the country, about one-third of the country rents, for most of them, the rent is too damn high. In 70 of Canada's 795 neighborhoods, two-bedroom apartments are unaffordable to all, but 24 neighborhoods, it's unaffordable to everyone, a one-bedroom, I should say. That's 3% of the country. And we're talking about St. Catharines, Sudbury, and some portions of Quebec. So if you're looking for an affordable one-bedroom apartment on a minimum wage salary, that's where you need to live, basically. Everyone else, the rent is too damn high.
Yeah, because some of the numbers, obviously Vancouver, as we know, is high and everything. If you have a minimum wage job, you need to work 84 hours for a one-bedroom and 112 for a two-bedroom, according to this study. Toronto, 79 hours and... I think it was 96 hours for a two-bedroom. And the scale is all over the place. Guelph's in the top 10, which isn't a surprise from what I hear.
Because our vacancy rate is so low.
Yeah. And there are places going up. I saw, again, Costco. I Googled them trying to find out what the rent was. But because they're luxury condos, it's probably too damn high for anybody that's on minimum wage and probably working across the street in one of the shops there. So this is one of the key problems. For the longest time, Guelph and places, on the outskirts where the rent was affordable, let's say, and they consider affordable rent, isn't it 30, no more than 30% of your income spent on rent?
Pre-tax.
That's the
maximum.
And most people are, or a lot of people are clocking in at 50, and obviously even more than that, just keep a roof over their head.
Well, the Star talked to a 24-year-old guy who's a cook at a Riverdale restaurant. He spends like half his salary on rent and utilities, and he shares with two other people. So,
wow, and still,
you know, it's kind of galling, you know, when it put in those terms. I mean, but it's been a compounded problem because, as the Star article pointed out, you've had geared to income housing basically stalled since the 1990s. You've had increasingly deregulated market that has sort of like taken the chains off that, you know, the amount of rent you can charge. You've had speculation in the housing market. And you hear that. I heard that in a radio ad at work yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, something to the effect of real estate is an investment that isn't taxed. So,
well, and only that's not completely true, but
well, I mean, but you don't pay, you know, ongoing, you know, yeah, sort of capital gains tax, those kind of things. You know, it's an investment assessor, and yeah, you pay property taxes, but
well, that's the thing.
It's probably yeah, less than your average sort of like paying a broker and, you know, capital gains taxes and all that. There's this attitude that real estate's a great investment and it's only going to go up. And so far, that's been true. Meanwhile, wages are stagnating. Nobody's building geared to income housing. Nobody's really building housing that's affordable either.
No, and then you know, once housing became a commodity, and that came out of the mostly out of the 90s, mm-hmm, in the Harris years, when Harris famously, we are not in the business of creating housing for people. And that public housing got trashed from that moment, has never really recovered. There hasn't been any movement in that area, other than in Toronto, it's like, well, the places are decrepit, a lot of them for the most part. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been putting any money into it. Like, well, not unlike 24 Sussex. We actually didn't get to talk about that, but spend no money on it and then complain about it when the next guy moves in and says, you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Different topic again, but you know, similarly, it's like, this is the situation where you've got these extremes, and there's nothing in the middle for the average person, just sort of schlepping away on either minimum wage or you know, not much more above minimum wage, which is a lot of people in this town and in other places and in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anybody affords to live in Toronto. I mean, when I was in Toronto and renting, it was a lot of years ago, and it seemed like a lot then. There was four of us. So similar, you know, and that's 90s. I don't think, and it hasn't gotten any better, I don't think. But what is the Guelph strategy? And you would know about this because you probably sat through it at City Hall, is that they want in targets for affordable housing is 25% of people to own, 1% to be a primary rental, and 4% secondary, which would mean that somebody who owns a house has a secondary rental, which they will in turn rent to somebody. Those numbers seem really, really low. Not as much the ownership right, one, but it's like you want 4% secondary rentals as a target and 1% primary, which is just you're sort of renting an apartment from a firm, right? Like a company.
I think secondary rentals is also like
granny flats,
basements
and, yeah,
and, you know, cottage houses and mm-hmm, things like that. Yeah.
Purpose built. And then some of the Ontario rules changed to supposedly make that easier.
And you have right, to keep in mind, too, that like the nomenclature is not terribly specific. So you could say affordable housing, and someone will think it's that 30% of income number.
Yeah.
And somebody else will think geared to income, so like social housing. Others might think of like, you know, some kind of supportive housing where, you know, maybe it's like drug treatment or something like that, where you have a roof over your head as you're getting clean. It's just all these things are sort of batting back and forth. So anytime you have to have a conversation about affordable housing, it's almost like, okay, what are we talking about? Is it this category, this category, yeah, or this category?
Because people automatically equate affordable housing with the projects, right? And then there's this reluctance to, oh, no, we don't want that beside us. But they're not even building, I hate to use the terminology, but the equivalent of the projects. I mean, that's not even getting built.
Geared right? to
it's
income
luxury.
Housing.
Yeah. You slap luxury in front of it, charge double for the rent or whatever, or the lease. And you know, it's just not on. Now those are filling up. It's not as if when I looked at that website, I said, oh, there's only two units left, but I honestly think people are coming from elsewhere to fill those. It's not as if, you know, it's the whole sell up in Toronto and take your assets and come here because it's cheaper.
Well, there is
but
that.
It's still expensive. Right?
There is that.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is still the case, but I remember when I did a podcast about this a couple of years ago, like the real estate agents I talked to were like, yeah, this is what happens, that, you know, something goes on the market, somebody from Toronto calls up, says, I will buy it for $100,000 over the asking price because they just sold theirs.
For ridiculous money.
For a ridiculous price. So they'll still have like 300 grand left
sight
over.
Sight unseen, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
They saw the pictures on the website.
Yeah, and because, you know, the low vacancy rate here, there isn't that much for real estate agents to haggle over. And before you know it, you know, it's job done. The deal's closed. I think that has changed somewhat. You don't see the sold signs go up as fast as they were a couple of years ago.
You also don't see them disappear as fast. If we can say anything in my neighborhood, I'm in the ward, but in other places too that I've seen on the way back and forth from campus in particular, the for sale signs are there longer now.
Yeah.
So I mean, it used to be they could be there for like a day and they were gone. And there was one in our neighborhood that was a week because it was a fairly good deal. But beyond like any of these sort of luxury ones that they've been building, I think there seems to be a bit of a stall there. And I'm not sure why. Maybe the cooling is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, they're probably still paying too much money outright for mm-hmm. them.
Right.
But the only way to build and get affordable housing is for people to build and get affordable housing, right? So who does it come from? It usually gets batted back to the government. Developers aren't going to do it. Even with an incentive, they won't do it. And there's that play that they do where they try and, we'll do this instead if we don't have to build affordable housing in our development and over again. Because they don't want a certain element, whether it's, you know, whatever class, in that building.
Well, it's more than that too. It's that's happened at the city of Guelph too, where they have a contingency fund, right? It's like, we're going to offer you an incentive to build geared to income housing or build affordable units. And nobody kind of really takes them up on the offer because there's not a lot of money in the account too. Although there was a recent project that came forward that basically sort of drains the account if it ends up going forward too.
Right.
So, but that is also born out of a level of desperation of like, we can't get any affordable units going, let alone like geared to income units or any kind of supportive housing. And it just kind of,
fizzles everything.
It fizzles. And so like anything you want to like build, you latch onto. I mean, that's why there was such a controversy over the Dublin Street development,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, they're going to build affordable units. It's like, oh, you don't want to support affordable units, even though the building itself was probably inappropriate for the land. And then it becomes a political thing.
It's someone like, by Church of Our Lady.
Yeah.
The one for the seniors specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the tennis courts. Yeah.
And that's just gone now, right?
I think it might
block the view of the church, so we can't build it.
Well, I think it's at the LPAT now.
Ah.
But yeah, so...
So, affordable housing now.
I know, right?
That's our editorial. Three words, at affordable housing
But
now.
I mean, there was an article in Press Progress this week that said that, you know, the Ontario government is looking at cutting, housing support, rental support, homeless assistance. And I mean, and that's like the most critical one because what anyone who works in social matters will tell you is that homelessness is kind of like the linchpin to dealing with all the other problems. Because once you kind of put a roof over somebody's head, they're able to sort out all the rest of their crap, whether that's drug addiction, whether that's mental health, whether that's like job, whether that's, you know.
Absolutely. You need a base.
Yeah. You need somewhere.
Some kind.
You need to be anchored somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think if we get people into housing, I think the other problems start to sort themselves out. But we'll see what happens on the campaign trail. Unfortunately, that's it for this week's show. And unfortunately, we will be off the next 2 weeks.
Or fortunately for us, a little bit. But yeah.
Well, unfortunately for the listeners.
A little bit of R&R.
So we will be running reruns on August the 1st and August the 8th and be back fresh and rested on August the 15th. And until then, you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you may. You can download it from our website every Monday or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or at the podcast app of your choice, which is iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com, and it's Larry the Cat at 10 Downing Street.
Well, I'm glad we got that
superstar.
Now I can go to sleep
rest
tonight
easy.
Satisfied.
As long as you don't get an Amber Alert, you'll be fine.
Jeez, full circle.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me. It's going to be a repeat of DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back on August the 15th with a new episode Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we will see you then.